The Holy Gospel according to Luke, the 13th chapter.
Glory to you, Lord.
At that very hour, some Pharisees came and said to Jesus, "Get away from here, for Herod wants to kill you." And he said to them, "Go and tell that fox for me. Listen, I am casting out demons and performing cures today and tomorrow, and on the third day I finish my work. Yet today, tomorrow, and the next day, I must be on my way, because it is impossible for a prophet to be killed outside of Jerusalem." Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the city that kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to it. How often have I desired to gather your children together as a hen gathers her brood under her wings, and you were not willing. See, your house is left to you, and I tell you, you will not see me until the time comes when you say, "Blessed is the one who comes in the name of the Lord." The Gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, O Christ. You may be seated. Well, there is an old Jewish proverb that I love. It asks the question, what is truer than truth? And then it gives the answer, the story. What is truer than true about our common humanity, our common story throughout the years, the centuries, and the ages? Certain themes always seem to surface, such as justice in the face of inequality, loyalty above all else, violence when human beings don't get their way, inevitable death, political and social issues that lead to war and to corruption, freedom from tyranny, and of course, what would a good story be without love? The best stories of our humanity can also include magical elements, dreams, cyclical patterns, uncanny coincidences, and the power of nature. Mavericks, dissidents, outsiders, rebels, those who ask a lot of questions and those who often bend the rules are our favorites to hear about, aren't they? After all, nice people with good manners and common sense don't make the most interesting of characters. Passion, heart, and love are what determine our future and form our faith and our hope. But sadly, we North Americans don't always realize these beautiful, gripping truths about our life together. We prefer safer stories, more linear, clearly laid out with their plot lines, and usually we prefer a tidy ending. And at times, such a preference severely limits our imagination because it closes our mind from hearing and seeing what might be more deeply true about our lives together. And that is why on this Sunday, when we celebrate and we pray for the great continent of South America, we must consider one of the continent's greatest contributions to literature and culture, the genre of magical realism. For those of you who are unfamiliar with it, it is a fiction genre in which magical elements blend to create a realistic atmosphere. And this blending of the magical with reality creates a deeper level of understanding of the reality itself. The existence of fantasy elements in the real world provides the basis for magical realism. In other words, writers don't invent new worlds, but they reveal the magical and its power in this world, in our very lives. And as Nobel Prize-winning author Gabriel Garcia Marquez said, surrealism comes from the reality of Latin America. Gabriel Garcia Marquez, affectionately known as Gabo by the people of Latin America, wrote many works. But his most famous and the one for which he won the Nobel Prize was 100 Years of Solitude. His biographer, Jared Martin, describes it as the first novel in which Latin Americans truly recognized themselves and their story. A novel that defined them, celebrated their passion, their intensity, their spirituality and superstition, their grand propensity for failure. 100 Years of Solitude is the history of the isolated town of Macondo and the family who founds it, the Buendias, through seven generations. For years, the town has little to no contact with the outside world. The patriarch of the family, Jose Arcadio Buendia, is impulsive and inquisitive, deeply solitary, and alienates himself from others. And these character traits will be inherited by his descendants throughout the novel and play in cyclical patterns against one another. Gradually, the village loses its innocent, solitary state when it establishes contact with other towns in the region. And this is when civil wars begin as they are discovered, bringing violence and death to peaceful Macondo that previously had known neither. Macondo changes from an idyllic, magical, and sheltered place to a town irrevocably connected to the outside world. Now it will suffer dictatorships and firing squads, and when good leaders are found, coups will rise up to kill them and to replace them. More than a century goes by in the course of the book, and so most of the stories that are described are the major events in the life of the Buendias. Births, deaths, marriages, love affairs, all with this backdrop of war and violence. A sense of the family's destiny for greatness, that they might attain peace and build a good society, remains alive throughout the novel and in its gripping characters. But for the Buendia family, as for the entire village of Macondo, the forces of modernity are devastating. Imperialist capitalism reaches Macondo as an American banana plantation moves in and exploits the land and its workers. Eventually, angry at the inhumane way in which they are treated, the banana workers go on strike, and thousands of them are massacred by the army, which sides with the American plantation owners. When the bodies have been dumped into the sea, 5 years of ceaseless rains begin, creating a flood that will send Macondo into its final decline. Besides these 5 years of rain, other elements of magical realism fill the book, such as a plague of insomnia that also comes with intense memory loss for all. And Remedios, the beauty of a younger generation, is so gorgeous and ethereal that she simply ascends into heaven. She does not die. Magically, the blood of beloved son, Jose Arcadio, manages to seep from his body onto the floor, out into the streets, and travel through the town, all the way to his mother Ursula's house, into her kitchen, where she follows the trail of blood directly back to find her dead son. When the patriarch Jose Arcadio Buendia dies, a storm of flowers occurs. And in Marquez's own words, we hear the realism within the magic. They fell on the town all through the night in a silent storm, and they covered the roofs, and they blocked the doors, and they smothered the animals who slept outdoors. So many flowers fell from the sky that in the morning the streets were carpeted with a compact cushion, and they had to clear them away with shovels and rakes so that the funeral procession could pass by. And even in the rainstorm at the end of the novel, we get exactly what would happen if a real place were under that much water for that long. The characters are wet and tired of being wet and don't want to go outside. They have no idea how to get food because all their crops can't grow and they can't feed their animals or themselves. The buildings, roads, and everything man-made is completely destroyed. This magic then is treated as a straight-up fact of life. And that's the combination of magic and reality that defines this genre and makes it the glorious thing that it is. This type of writing and this way of thinking leaves us always on the edge, always in a state of imaginative anticipation. Eyes and ears wide open to whatever might happen, and hearts open to many interpretations, perspectives, and realities. And my question for us this morning is, what if we could be disciples with such imaginations, willing to tell a story that is truer than true? For we as Christians do have another powerful story that is truer than truth. And all too commonly, we read this story with our minds closed, our ability to imagine limited. Take our passage for today. So often this passage has been kept out of conservative churches, never read by those who cannot imagine Jesus or God to have any feminine traits, let alone to be just as female as male. How could God possibly be like a mother hen? Mothers are pushy and out of control and overprotective, which are obviously horrifying characteristics of women everywhere. Please know that sarcasm at the end there. And yet, when we take a moment and let this image of God as a mother hen sit with us, we find such beauty and freedom there within. It's like coming home, right, to the comfort of a mother, as only a mother can give, enfolded in her arms, sheltered by her breast, kept safe, unconditionally loved, and forgiven. Similarly, if you were listening with an imaginative anticipation to our gospel reading for today, you might have noticed something peculiar. Who is it in our reading that warns Jesus about Herod coming for him? It's the Pharisees, right? Those guys that we normally think of as the bad guys, right? And revealing an appalling inability to imagine, many interpreters over the years have accused the Pharisees in this story of being chronically anxious. I mean, that's what would have made them lead to tell Jesus about Herod. They're chronically anxious, worried for themselves and their own community. But that is so dismissive of the Pharisees as human beings and as such a limited imagination. What about the possibility that some of these Pharisees did believe in Jesus and were trying to protect him? They don't always have to be the bad guys, do they? Well, anyone who asks whether or not 100 years of solitude was intended to speak about real people and real events from Latin America never listened to or read Marquez's Nobel Prize acceptance speech, and I would highly recommend it. It doesn't take too long to read. Because the novel does indeed come from his very real life of growing up in Colombia. And the massacre of the banana workers in the novel, he didn't make that up. It happened. The sadness that followed was almost as tangible as 5 long years of rain. Marquez intended the novel to reveal the truth about what happens to people and societies when they suffer the abuses of colonialism and imperialism repeatedly. Sadly, the Buendias are destined to become extinct, partly from outside forces and partly from their own response to these factors, and Marquez does not let his characters off the hook in this regard. But the novel is cyclical and repetitive and magical and begins and ends out of nothing to make the bold point that the people of Latin America struggle to feel real because so many in our world have forgotten them. But we know one who has never forgotten them. This man we call Jesus. The one who dramatically and unabashedly predicts his death today. A death that, just like the banana workers, will be the result of injustice, abuse of power, and the inability to imagine. And Jesus, by the way, is likely the most imaginative person I know. Certainly a maverick, dissident, outsider, and rebel, one who bent the rules time and again. After all, nice people with good manners and common sense don't make interesting characters. But passion, heart, and love are what determine our future and form our faith and hope. Peace in our lives and peace in the world will only come if we are willing to use the glorious gift of our imaginations as we tell our story and as we listen to the stories of our brothers and sisters around the world. Amen.